Hello and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another amazing guest to introduce to you now. Abby Durlewanger has been an advocate of the ketogenic lifestyle since 2017. Prior to that, she had been losing and regaining weight and trying every other diet under the sun. After weeks of research, she finally decided to give a ketogenic diet a try. After just 1 week, and after experiencing a surge of energy, focus, and amazing results, she was hooked. She has lost a total of 130 pounds, 145 inches, and has gone from a size 20 to a size 2. She has addressed her food and sugar addiction and has coped with her childhood trauma, depression, and anxiety. She has created the House of Keto website and has gone viral on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok with her twisted bacon recipe, which is absolutely awesome and amazing. I can't wait to talk about that. We are so grateful for Abby's work and her willingness to share her message on her platforms, and we're so happy that she could join us today here at Boundless Body Radio. Abby, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's an absolute honor. Did you ever foresee yourself being a social media phenom?
Oh gosh, I don't know that we're that, but definitely never, never, ever, ever. it's so crazy to me. It's funny still when we're out in public, randomly people will recognize the kids and they're like, "Your House of Keto." And I'm like, "Are we?" And they're like, "Yes, you are." And I'm like, it's super weird to me because it feels very invasive, but I think everyone just feels like they're part of our life because we just share so much. So we are still getting used to it. But my daughter, who is 11, she just loves it.
That's amazing. I just watched a video of your daughter at her talent show performance singing. That kid sing. Wow.
Thank you. That was her first time singing publicly. She was super nervous. Yeah, she was so nervous. And I said, you know what? I said, we win. So show up like a winner. She went wearing her own crown, said, even if they don't give me one, I'm wearing one. We had to watch from home because of COVID and all of that. So we had to watch over Zoom, but I am so, so proud of her. She graduates from fifth grade this week.
Wow.
And I don't know if it's considered valedictorian in fifth grade, but she has the highest grade in fifth grade. So she's getting to make the speech at graduation this week. So we're super, super proud of
her. That's amazing. That's so cool. Yeah. You guys just have the cutest kids, and you're right. You do such a great job of sharing your message and being really, you know, open and vulnerable about everything, which I really love and appreciate. And I'm so glad you decided to do that, because I mean, we talk with a lot of our guests about, you know, you could have just gotten really good results and kind of ridden off into the sunset without sharing, but you decided to make that a primary message and have spent a lot of time and work to be able to share that message. So we definitely really appreciate that. For the listener, can you tell us a little bit about your background and some of the challenges that you faced growing up?
So I was raised in Virginia Beach, Virginia. My dad was in the military, one of eight kids. We grew up in a very, very religious home. It was very strict. But I experienced some trauma in childhood, some sexual abuse outside of the home, no one in my family. And then physical abuse. Just, I had a lot of emotional trauma and, just didn't really know where to put it. I didn't really even understand until I became a mom what I was actually dealing with. So I struggled with postpartum depression after having my daughter, who is 11 now. And at the time, I didn't know what it was. I just thought, okay, I became a mom and I went crazy. I'm not really sure what's going on here. I kind of struggled with my weight since I was a kid. I think just realizing now with all the work that I do, when you experience trauma in childhood, you find some way to cope and survive. I've learned how to thank my body for doing that, and not necessarily seeing it as a bad thing, but I turned to food. Food was all that I had. I was left home a lot, kind of isolated from my other siblings, and food was something that was always there. So when I was home by myself, I would eat as much as I could, as quickly as I could, because I knew when my parents got back, I wouldn't be allowed to. It would kind of be off in my own little world again. I didn't realize then, but that's when my relationship with food started, where it wasn't just something to provide me with, you know, nutrients so I didn't die. It was providing the emotional relationship, I guess, with the world that I was missing out on. So that kind of just, I guess, rolled over into my teenage years. At 15, I was 200 pounds. And then when I had my daughter, prior to having my daughter, I had lost a lot of weight, but I did it in a very unhealthy way. I was young, I didn't have any responsibilities. So I was at the gym for 6 hours a day and Wasn't really eating. I'd taken every diet pill that was on the market, and I lost a lot of weight, but in a very unhealthy and just a way that was not sustainable. And so after having my daughter, I kind of struggled with my weight, just getting it back down to a place where I thought I was comfortable. And then I ended up getting pregnant with my son. He'll be 6 in October. And from the time I got pregnant with my son, the amount of weight that I gained after I had him versus while I was pregnant with him was just crazy. I gained probably like 50 pounds in 6 months. Wow. While I was breastfeeding. And I think that's when I really realized that I was struggling and dealing with something much bigger than just I love food. My anxiety and depression was at an all-time high. At that point, I had a little bit more education, so I recognized what I was dealing with, postpartum depression. I didn't leave my house for almost 3 years.
Wow.
When I tried to go, I tried to go outside with my son, and I was just, you know, I had him. I was sick my entire pregnancy. I could not leave the house. And if I did, I had to leave with buckets and containers because I was getting sick everywhere. It was just really bad. And then after I had him, I felt like I could not eat enough food. Like literally I was like chugging cans of ravioli. Like it was insane. And I was just like, what is going on? I didn't feel safe going out in the world. Like my anxiety was just super high. And, I remember it was like maybe around November, December, he was a few months old. And my husband said he wanted to take our son out for a walk and wanted me to go with him. I had just been literally sitting in bed. And I get up and I try to find clothes to wear, and I could not find a pair of pants that fit me. My maternity pants, I could not get up over my thighs. I had a, you know, this huge baggy shirt, but I could not find any pants. And I literally had to sit and watch my son go outside on his first walk from the window because I didn't have pants. And that's when it kind of like all hit me that, hey, this is not just like you're sitting at home eating food because you feel lonely or whatever. Like this is a big deal. So of course I'm like, all right, I got to find pants. I start ordering pants online. They come, they didn't fit. I'd send them back. Finally found my size 20s that fit. So I had pants so that I could go out and participate in the world, but I still didn't want to. I still had a lot of anxiety and just didn't really know what to do with myself. And I decided, okay, I've got to do something about this. I'm missing out on my kid's life. I could barely stand up. When we would go places, my husband would have to call to see if they had a place for me to sit down because I gained so much weight so quickly. My joints were just like giving out. I would be walking up the stairs and I would trip or fall because it was just a lot of weight so quickly. And I was like, all right, we've got to do something about this. I started trying to just, you know, work out and try to work out, you know, a bad diet and think that just being in the gym would take that away. But it didn't help. And I was lost and felt like, okay, I'm either going to just commit to being, you know, a 600 pounder, order me a 20X shirt and let's just call it a day. Or I've got to figure this out. So that was kind of the place that I was left in before I found this lifestyle that we're living now.
Wow. This story is just, it's so powerful. And I think it's so prevalent also. How many people out there probably feel those same things? Like, yeah, I have a weight problem. I'm not very comfortable with it. I'm buying new clothes all the time. I don't want to be in this space. I want to go walk with my kids. But like, how can you describe like the feeling? I don't know. Was it like hopeless of feeling like I'm trying to do everything they're telling me to do and it's not working? It's not that I'm not trying.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely experienced that. And even now, and you know, the work that we do, we hear it so often that it just lets me know that then I was not wrong. There were other people that were feeling how I was feeling. And so it just feels like hopeless. You know, we hear just move more and eat less. And it's like, gee, Jan, if it was that simple, we'd all be, you know, healthy.
That's right. Something is
not clicking here. And then you add the mental side of it that I did not want to look at myself in the mirror because I was just so disgusted with myself. I did not recognize me. And having to face myself in the mirror every day was just like having to look at my failure. Like I felt like a failure, but facing myself in the mirror every day, I saw my failure. I was literally wearing it on my body. My body was growing so quickly from all of this weight that I was gaining. I had stretch marks everywhere. And it was just like, wow, this is not who I want to be. I didn't feel great. I didn't think very highly of myself. And, you know, I had my daughter who was, I guess, five and a half at the time, who's just watching me. And she would draw pictures of her family. And it was mom in the house and her dad and baby brother outside.
Wow.
And it was just, it was breaking me. Like, you know, well, mommy's in bed because mommy doesn't feel well. And it wasn't that mommy didn't necessarily feel well. You know, I wasn't sick. I didn't have a cold, but my body was, I was hurting. My ankles hurt, my knees hurt, but mentally I wasn't doing well. And I think because of what I was dealing with mentally, I was seeing a reflection of that in my body, but then also the reverse, like because of my body, it's how I was treating myself mentally. You know, you're not good enough. You're a failure. You can't do this. Why can't you just get it right? And it felt very isolating, and I felt very alone. Like nobody else is dealing with this. Nobody else is experiencing this. I think, you know, every Sunday night there's like, I don't know. It's like, I think everyone deals with it. Every Sunday night, there's a glimmer of hope for you to be a better person in the next week. You know, you buy that bag of spring mix and you buy a cucumber and it's like, I'm going to change my life this week. And then, you know, Monday morning by 9 o'clock, all bets are off and I've eaten an entire pack of Oreos. I'm seeing what restaurants are open to have food delivered. And there I was again, sitting in my failure.
Wow. That's just so powerful. I've heard you talk a little bit about this in the past, but can you explain the importance of faith and what that meant to you to have, I don't know, like some beacon of hope that lifted you out of this like hopeless state that you were in?
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad that you brought this up. I'm always nervous about talking about it because I don't know my audience and if they're going to say, oh no, you can't talk about that. But if I can be 100% honest, the only thing that has helped me throughout this entire journey has been my faith. When I tell you at the peak of my depression and anxiety, the constant thing I heard was, you shouldn't even be here. I was suicidal and depressed. And I just heard that voice over and over and over again, telling me that I wasn't enough and I didn't deserve to be here. And I had had enough. And I remember one day I was sitting in my closet thinking of all the ways I could take my life because I was just over it. I felt like I took up too much space. I was a burden on my family because of my weight. And I saw my husband doing so many things to help out the family. He was taking care of my son. He was taking care of our daughter. He was taking care of me. And it was like, okay, well, he's able to do all of this. You're not really needed. He's got it. And I just kept hearing this thing. It's like, you don't need to be here anymore. You don't need to be here anymore. And I'll never forget. I was sitting in my closet one day and thinking, okay, how can I take my life? I don't want to do it while the kids are here. You know, I need my daughter to be in school and maybe I can get my husband to take my son out. And then, you know, they can just, maybe he'll come back and find me before he picks up our daughter. And literally as a mom, like thinking about the least, you know, inconvenient way to take my own life. Wow. And I'm sitting there in a closet, literally like that's a mom right there for you. I don't want to impact anybody else's day. So let me see what day is the best day on the calendar. Wow. And so I'm sitting there in my closet and my full name is Abigail. And I heard something say to me, what is your name? And I'm like, why are you asking me that? Like, I didn't have a good relationship with my dad at the time. And my name means father's joy. And so when I heard something saying to me, like, what is your name? I'm like, why would God, if this is you, why would you be asking me this question right now? Like, clearly I'm not my father's joy. If he saw me right now, he would be embarrassed by me. And it was like in that moment that I just felt God saying to me, it's not that you're his joy, but you're my joy. And like this just emotion just came over me. I was just sobbing in my closet. And it was just like a moment that I allowed myself to just experience the full love of God, just the way that I was. Even if I didn't lose any weight, being depressed, anxious, all of the things that I thought was wrong with me, God just saying, you are my joy. And in that moment, it just felt so good because I hadn't allowed myself to experience that. I'm a failure. I'm depressed. I have anxiety. I haven't been able to play with my kid because my legs hurt so bad. You know, I can't go on field trips with my daughter because there's nowhere to sit at the zoo. You know, that we have to keep walking. All of these things as a mom, I felt like I was a failure at, but God was saying to me, you are my joy. And so I really just started, you know, I had grown up in church and because I had a lot of stuff kind of happen around that with some of my trauma in childhood, I was just kind of put off by it. And I didn't really want to interact with anyone at church or at any church or anything like that. So I honestly just started listening to worship music and just started listening to the words of these songs. And at the time back then, one of the most popular songs is a song that talks about how we're chosen and we're not forsaken. We're who God says that we are. And I remember just crying in my car and just thinking like, God, do you really think this about me? Like me right now, as heavy as I am, as overweight as I am, as embarrassed and ashamed as I am of myself, like, how could you think those things of me? And I really believe that that has been the thing that has sustained me throughout the last 5 years with my health journey, has been my faith in God, knowing what He says about me, knowing how much He loves me. I literally tell my daughter all the time, I'm like, God is obsessed with you. He counts the hairs on your head. And so it was through that that I learned, like, if God is so obsessed with me that He's counting the hairs on my head on a daily basis, why would He not care about my struggle with food and with weight? And so the more time that I spent with God, I started to feel like, hey, I feel like I don't feel so empty. I don't feel so depressed. I don't feel so alone and so isolated. And it was this feeling that I used to get from food that I was starting to feel after listening to worship music or after just sitting and spending time with God. And that's when I really learned that I had basically been using food in place of what God desired to be in my life. And I had a food addiction, and it had become an idol for me. It was what gave me peace. It's what gave me joy. It's what gave me comfort. It's literally where I had found my identity. Like, everybody knew me as a girl who loved food. You know, Abby loves pizza. I had so many Papa John's points from buying pizza. I had enough points to get like 60 free pizzas. That's how bad it was.
I wanted to ask you about that actually, because do you still have some of those? Like, I'll take one of those.
I don't. They got rid of the program. I was in the middle of trying to talk with them about how we could like take the points and use it to like give the pizzas to a homeless shelter.
Sure.
And they got rid of the entire program. Oh, but like, I still have screenshots. I know I still have screenshots. They actually, it was so bad that so on Friday night by like 4 o'clock, we would have placed my order. And like, I guess a week or so had gone by. It was so bad that Papa John's called me to see if I was okay. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm fine. The first time they did it, I was like, oh, we're on vacation, you know, down at the beach. We ordered from the Papa John's down here by the beach. And then the next time they called, you know, I hadn't had pizza for probably about 60 days. And they were like, my driver said, you know, we haven't heard from you. You know, they hadn't heard from you. No one's delivered to your house. And we just wanted to make sure you were okay. And I'm like, actually, I'm okay. Like, it was so embarrassing. My husband's like recording on his phone. And I'm like, wait, who is this? Where are you calling from? Like, literally, it was so embarrassing to have Papa John's calling me saying like, our drivers think something's wrong because no one's been out to your house. Like, they knew we tipped well, they knew our order, get it there on time. And that was like, you know, the end of it, but it was just wild. And the way I used pizza, I mean, I would eat a whole pizza by myself Friday night, two on Saturday, and then one on Sunday.
Wow.
And so it didn't really matter. I could have been exercising 6 hours a day, Monday through Friday, but Friday at 4 o'clock, I had to put on my sweatpants and I started eating pizza, and not just the pizza. I ate the crust. I ate everything. And I would think I would drink like a 2 liter Dr. Pepper over those 3 days. And it was just because I felt so empty and I needed something to help me from childhood, like with my trauma. And I've learned just with all the work that I've done, when you experience like trauma in the body, you start to find ways to cope with that. And one of my ways was where I would just basically disassociate. I was there physically, but mentally I was somewhere else. Like, I couldn't feel what was happening to my body. Sometimes I could hear, I couldn't see that well, but it was like this safe space that I created because I did not feel safe in my body and I did not feel safe in my environment. And so I'd gotten so good at that, that the only way to bring myself back to not be in this place where I wasn't present was to stuff myself with food, because I learned how to numb the pain that I had been experiencing through disassociating, that I needed something to bring me back. And from all the stuff that I've learned, it's not uncommon to turn to some type of addiction. Some people will even turn to self-harm or something like that because they can't feel anymore, because they become so good at their coping skill, which for me was disassociation, that you're so numb. And like, the height of that is the ultimate disassociation, which is eventually taking your own life. And so I've learned how urgent it was for me to address that, because it's like, okay, I know that whatever I do, I'm going to do it to like the 100th. Like, that's just my personality. So when I was going hard for food, I went hard. And then, you know, taking away food the way that I was using it, it's like, okay, now I'm just disassociating more. So now I have to find something else, because at a certain point, it's not enough to just leave my body and be in this place. You start to think about and even fantasize about, okay, if I'm no longer alive, that's the ultimate numbing and I don't have to feel this pain anymore. So honestly, just like opening myself up and allowing God to come in and speak to that trauma and really help me kind of settle some of the questions that I had, like, God, where were you when this happened? Because, okay, everyone's telling me you're a good God and you're a good father, but I'm a good mom. I would never let my kids just get hurt. Well, God's always there and he's always with you. Well, why didn't he do anything? And these were questions that I had that, okay, yes, I believe in God, but I don't know if he's a good father. I don't know about that one. You know, he might be good at ruling and reigning, but, you know, when I was 9 years old and people were violating me, he stood there and watched. Is that what you're telling me? And having to settle that as a parent myself, I just couldn't. And it was really through, I've done some extensive work in therapy, just really learning that it wasn't just God was there, Jesus was there with me, but that when I was being violated, when I was being hurt, when people were taking advantage of me, they were also doing it to him. And he wasn't just there watching like, oh, I wish I could do something. And in that moment, it just felt like, wow, it's not like I'm just going to him and telling him, hey, Jesus, these people did this to me, but he knows. And that's, I think, one of the biggest things for me, because it feels so isolating to deal with any type of mental health issue, depression, anxiety, or just trauma in general. Nobody's going to understand. Nobody experienced it the way that I did. And that shame leaves us feeling so isolated. But when I realized that, hey, Jesus wasn't just there watching, God didn't allow this thing to happen. Like, we live in a broken and fallen world, and God was there. Jesus was there. These things happened to him also. So he understands, and he wants to take that hurt. He wants to take the way I felt violated and all those things that were done to me. He wants to take that. He doesn't want me to have to walk around with the weight of that trauma. And so even just recently, over the last couple of months, going deeper and doing more work related to that. And that's honestly, that's what we do. I love living a ketogenic lifestyle. I love Twisted Bacon. I love all the delicious foods that we ate. I say all the time, I'm so thankful that when I had this revelation that we were not vegan or vegetarian or anything, because we'd probably be the house of vegan right now or something like that. So I am super thankful that it was keto that we were doing when this happened. But I think you can lose weight with any diet if you do it. Exercise is great if you do it. But there's something more that's there that for a lot of people, they have to wake up and realize, hey, I'm dealing with something more than just I like food and it's delicious. Like, this food is meeting an emotional need in me. And we'd say all the time to our clients and group members, like, hey, you might not have a relationship with God and that's okay, but you are valuable. You are worth something. You deserve to have someone hear how you feel and not just stuff your feelings down with food. So maybe you don't want to talk to Jesus or God. That's not your thing. You're not into it. I'm not going to push that on anyone, but there is a friend, there is a sibling, there is a spouse, there is someone out there that you need to find to talk with and share your feelings, because you need to get them out. Because when they sit there, we literally take food to just stuff it back down inside, and it's never enough. And it causes so much harm to our body in the long run. And we think that we're helping because we don't want to be a burden to anyone, but we really do need people. And that's why I advocate so much for people to get into therapy. Because that one is so much easier. You can just go and dump and leave. Like, you don't have to go to the movies with them next Friday. And they're like, oh my gosh, there's Abby. She's kind of crazy. Like, therapy is amazing because you can just go, you can talk about it, and you can leave. And the more I got stuff out, the better I felt. And for me, that's even where social media came in for me. Just like, hey, I'm just going to share. Like, I said, when I'm doing this, like, I can't put on a face for social media. Like, you guys are going to get the real 100% me. You might not agree. You might not like it. But I'm going to tell you how I feel today. I'm going to tell you how I failed at my diet, or how I'm sitting here right now with a whole box of pizza and I'm eating it, but we're going to talk through it and we're going to get it out. And that's one of the reasons I love social media, because it allows you to connect with so many people. And even if it's just one person that says, hey, I know what you're going through, I felt that way too, it helps. And so once I learned that other people were dealing with what I was dealing with, it was like, how could I not share this? Even if it helps one person. Like, I remember there was a time when I think I'd lost maybe 100 pounds at this point, and I'm in the mirror trying on this shirt that was 4X and it was so big. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror and I just started crying, and I wasn't sad, but I was crying because at that moment it was like, I felt the weight of my depression and anxiety and everything that I had been feeling over the past year. I felt it all right in that moment. And it was like, I just started thinking about all the people that were going to be waking up on that day, realizing that that was how they felt. And I felt like, okay, I feel better now, but I'm leaving them behind. Like, I can't just leave them. Like somebody has to help them. Somebody has to bridge this gap between how they feel right now and a place that they can get to, not even just physically with their body. Like, I'm going to show you it's possible to lose weight, but somebody has to tell them, I know what you feel like today. I know that you were upset that you woke up and that you took another breath. I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to hear the cry of your baby. And yes, you're thankful, but God, did you really wake me up again to live this existence that I hate? I know what that feels like. Yes, you're still a good mother and you can be in a place where you don't wake up feeling like that. But I didn't see anybody in my space bridging the gap and not making us feel like we were crazy. Wow. Like, no, this is a real feeling. You know, you can still be a good mom and deal with depression and anxiety. You can still be a good mom and not have it all together. It's not one or the other. And I was just thinking in that moment, like, God, I just want to help people to know that they're not alone. Even if it's only one person that says, Abby, thank you for sharing this because I felt that way. And now I want to go on. Like, I wish that I had somebody saying the things that I say now back when I was in that place, because it was so isolating. And when you're dealing with depression and anxiety, that's the kicker. It's just like, there's nobody else that understands. Nobody else is experiencing it this way. And so then you get to the point where it's like, well, maybe I just shouldn't be here anymore. Like, we only need one person to say, you know what? Me too. I know what it feels like to not want to do Mother's Day because you're just so sick of being alive. I know what that feels like, but you put on a brave face today and you got through it. I know what that feels like. And to be able to do that for so many men and women is just probably the greatest honor of my life, to be able to help people know that, hey, you're not alone. Like, I felt that way too. And let me tell you how bad mine was. And it helps them feel a little bit more comfortable to open up and share, hey, here's what I'm dealing with. Here's what I dealt with. And I'm like, girl, me too. I did that too. Like, you ate all your kids' snacks before they even knew you got them from the grocery store. That was me. I did that. Yeah. So, you know, I would see, and everyone that I saw in my space or that was trying to help me was, you know, these fit women, these women that look like they'd been in shape their entire life. They never looked like they'd ever had a donut or struggled with any of the stuff I struggled with. And it was like, yeah, it's really easy for you to hand me this meal plan and tell me good luck. Like, you don't know what it feels like, you know, just eat, you know, eat less and move more. And I'm like, it's not that simple. There's something else. Like, I need something else. And so I think made it my mission to let people know, like, if on any given day someone says me too, I feel like I've done my work for the day. And I need other people to know, hey, you're not alone. Like, I've felt this way before. I know what you're going through and dealing with. And I think sometimes the weight of failure from all the diets that we've tried makes it always feel like it's just insurmountable. And so I need them to know, like, hey, this is not, this diet didn't work and this diet didn't work, and so I'm a failure. Like, there's something else going on here. Any of those diets could have worked, but they would never work if you were not addressing this bigger issue, this bigger problem that you have. And so I really think because of how I walked through it, the grace that I felt when I learned, hey, you're not just eating right now because you really like food. Because if you really liked food, you would have been able to stop after one. But you had 12 and then you went back and got more. Something else is going on. And it's because that food was making me feel safe or making me feel protected or making me feel that love that I was missing from childhood. So no, it never felt like enough. And that's the part that I think people miss. And they're so hard on themselves. Like, I just can't get this diet. You're never going to get this diet because you're using food to fill this void that you have. So when I tell you, you can only have 1200 calories, for someone who's missing out on love from childhood or feels abandoned from childhood or has depression or anxiety, these bigger things that they're dealing with, no, 1200 calories are not enough. It's like, you're taking away the only thing that's been sustaining me and you're not filling it in with anything else that makes life doable. And for me, that has been my faith. Like, I would not be where I am today without my faith. I would not have been able to do this. It is not me. And everything that we do, we try to point back to that and let people know, hey, like, you can do this. There's a certain level of discipline and commitment that you need, but this is my secret. Everyone else, what's your secret? I'll be honest with you. It isn't a meal plan and it isn't a way of eating. This is my secret. And so I started to learn, hey, if God cares about me, he cares about this. I can pray about this. And so even if it's just a simple prayer, God, don't let this food meet any need in me that you desire to meet. And even if I still eat the food does not feel the same. It doesn't fill me in the way that it filled me prior to. It doesn't make me feel safe. It doesn't make me feel comforted. It doesn't make me feel peace. It's just food. It's just nutrients. And so we teach people how to break that emotional bond and reliance that they have on food to fill these needs that God desires to meet and that he's given us a community of people to meet. Like, I shouldn't feel like my best friend is pizza. Like, he gave me a group of friends for that. And I can't do that if I never go to them and share how I'm feeling or build any type of connection with them. If I only keep it surface and say, oh yeah, everything's fine. Meanwhile, I'm feeling suicidal on the inside. Wow. Like, that's not fair. I'm not even letting them be there. So I think through my own journey, letting people see like, hey, I'm not just going to tell you about something. I'm going to show you exactly what I'm talking about. Like, this is how I felt. This is what I was thinking then. And here's what I did. Here's how God came into that situation and turned it around. And so that's what we try to do on a daily basis. It's just in everything that we're doing, point people back to Jesus and just say, hey, this is how we made it work. Even with our son, with his diet and all the issues that we saw with him, like, yeah, I think it's great that he eats the way that he does, but I know at the end of the day, that's only Jesus. Like, that was not my doing, only Jesus. And so we just like to incorporate our faith in everything that we do because it's truly who we are. And it's honestly, it's my secret to the success that I've had.
Wow. That is such an amazing story. I love that. I'm so grateful that you wanted to talk about that. I think that's super empowering and inspiring. And I'm so glad that you were willing to share that part of your story. When did you first start to marry kind of those feelings and feeling like, you know, your spirituality was increasing and you started to see good results with finding a ketogenic diet? Like, how did that come about? And what were your first impressions of a ketogenic diet?
So I guess when I started keto, I was just at that point where like I was starting to get back more into my faith. And when someone at the gym that I was working out with, they mentioned it and I was just like, wait a second, that does not sound good. That sounds like I'm going to die. Like, you know, I hadn't really seen any sustainable, you know, progress or results with the 1200 calorie brown rice and, you know, thin chicken breast that I was eating. I would lose 4 pounds during the week and then I gain it all back over the weekend. And so I was freaking out like, oh my gosh, I'm going to gain weight back. And then I was like, wait a second, honestly, what do I really have to lose if I try this? I hadn't had full fat cheese or sausage or anything in my house like that for probably a good 4 or 5 months because I was trying really hard to, you know, stick to my diet and be super strict. So I wouldn't have it in my house. I would just order all the stuff I wasn't supposed to be eating. That was before DoorDash was really big. So we'd have to either send my husband to go get it or go pick it up. So I was like, you know what? Let me try this. I freaked out because it sounded like a recipe for disaster, like full fat dairy, bacon, sausage, like all these fatty foods, all the stuff we're not supposed to be eating. Like, this sounds like I'm going to die. So I am like, I was homeschooled. So I'm in that group of people that's like, I like to learn on my own. Like, I teach myself things. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to learn everything that I can about this diet. So for about 6 weeks, I continued with my regular 1200 calorie brown rice and sweet potato diet, continued to gain and lose the same 4 pounds. And I was up all night. I would just all day. I became obsessed with it, learning everything that I could about it. And then finally I was like, okay, I'm going to try it. I was still eating pizza every weekend. So a trainer that I was working with challenged me and was like, hey, why don't you try to see if you can do 100 days of no pizza? And I was like, you're crazy. And they're like, all right, what about just 2 weeks? So I started on this little journey of seeing, okay, how long I could go without pizza while I'm learning about keto. And then it was like my 100th day, the day I'm supposed to have pizza was like the day that I officially was like, I'm going to start keto. And so I'm like, wait a second, you're telling me I'm not going to be able to eat pizza and I'm about to start keto. I had all this food in my house. I bought a pork butt. I've got a pork butt in the crock pot, all this bacon, all this sausage. And I'm like having a panic attack because I'm supposed to be eating pizza, but I'm supposed to be starting keto. And I was just like, this is crazy. So then I realized I could eat the toppings only. And I was like, all right, we're going to have to find out how we can make this work because I love pizza. Like, I cannot just stop eating pizza. So I started like making up my own recipes, like different pizza concoctions and stuff like that. But I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And I was like, the person's like, okay, well just try, you know, give it 6 weeks. And I was like, I'll give it 6 weeks. And after that, that's it. I'm going back to my regular, you know, low fat, you know, brown rice and thin chicken breast and fat-free salad dressing. I'm going back to my diet that, you know, I know works and I'm just going to stick to it like I've never done in the past. And so like week one on keto, I was like, this is crazy. Like, I've got all this meat. I'm like, and I wasn't a big meat eater. Like, I was chicken breast only. Oh, wow. And keto, like, there's all these meat options that you can eat. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like, I didn't even, honestly, I really didn't even eat bacon. Like, I feel so embarrassed and ashamed to say it because I'm known for my twisted bacon now, but I really didn't even eat bacon. Like, it wasn't my breakfast meat of choice. It was like sausage. So I've got all this food in my house, all this cheese. And I'm just like, wow, this feels really, really strange. But the first week of doing it, like, it was the first time that Friday came and I didn't feel like I needed a savior to like rescue me from the misery that I've endured for the last 4.5 days. And I was like, huh, like this food that I'm eating is really good. You know, like I'm having like a bacon cheeseburger bowl and like, I felt full. Like I felt like there was no way I could eat any more food. Like I was sticking to my macros very closely. I was very meticulous, tracking everything. And I was just like, there, I don't have any room for any more food. I never felt so full from so little food before. It was just like mind blowing to me. I'm like, this is like magic. Like what is happening? And then the weight just started to like fall off. And from my face, and that was like, my face was so fat because I had gained so much weight. My face was just so perfectly round, looked like a beautiful sweet potato pie. My face was so fat. And I'm on keto for like a week and people started asking me, I've been, you know, exercising and working my heart out for a whole 5 months. Nobody ever noticed my 4 pounds that I lost. And I'm on keto for a week and everyone's like, have you lost weight? Have you lost weight? And I'm like, why, yes, I have lost weight. I have. Thank you so much for noticing. I've been working for 6 whole months and nobody notices until I do a week on keto. Like my face started to slim down. I mean, it was crazy. And I was like, I was addicted. I was like, this is amazing. Like I could do this. And I tell people all the time, like these foods are delicious. Like it feels so wrong, but it's so right. Like it feels so wrong to eat the foods that we get to eat. And so for me, always like growing up the way that I did, I've always dealt with like shame and insecurity. So always having to be the one when we go out, you know, I'm the big girl at the table. So what are you about to order, Abby? You know, I always, oh, I'll just take, you know, a salad with grilled chicken and fat-free dressing on the side because I was so embarrassed. You know, it's like, I can't order the food I want to order because everybody's looking at me like, you don't need to be eating that. But then I'm ordering the salad and everybody's like, yeah, that's not going to help. And then on my way home, you know, I hit 3 drive-thrus and buy all the food I was should have just ate at the restaurant anyway. But it was like, okay, now I'm going out to restaurants and I'm like, yeah, I'll take a, you know, bacon cheeseburger with no bun, extra cheese and 3 extra sides of bacon and pickles. And people are just looking at me and I'm like, yeah, that's how I eat. And they're like, how do you eat like that? And you're losing weight. You've lost how much? And I'm just sitting there chomping on my bacon. Like, yeah, it works. This is what I eat.
That's amazing.
And so it felt like, it felt so powerful. Like, yeah, I'm doing this and I'm eating good food. Like I don't have to eat the shameful food at the table. The waiter is like, are you sure you want 3 sides of bacon? I'm like, yeah, add 3 extra sides of bacon. Don't judge me. Just put my food on my plate, bring it out. Don't worry about me. I got this. And so that part of it, I think just made it so fun for me, like all the different foods that I could eat. And I didn't feel the need to just cheat all the time because my foods felt like cheat foods. And I always like honored them in that way. Like, God, this food is so delicious. I shouldn't be eating it right now, but I get to. And that was something that I would like say to myself all the time because those diet foods are very depressing. Like if you've ever tried a lean cuisine, you should never even give that to your dog. It's gross. And it's like, man, we're already depressed that we're on a diet anyway. And then you feed us gross food. And that's one of the things I always tell my followers. I will never lie to y'all and tell y'all a food is good when it is nasty. I have too much respect for the old me, 260 pounds, size 20, like on my taste buds. I will not disrespect myself like that and tell y'all somebody's new keto food or diet food or whatever is good when it is not. Like I love good food. I did not get fat from eating nasty food. I love good food. So I will never lie to you and tell you something is good when it is not. But the foods that we get to eat on keto, like you wish your food tasted this good. Like oh, totally. It can't, like it doesn't compare. And people are like, oh, I do this diet or that diet. And I'm like, that sounds gross. Like my food is my food is delicious. And like, you're sitting over here dreaming about eating this or that. Like I get to eat that every day. And so it just felt, it felt so freeing. And I think because of where I was like mentally in my headspace, I did not want anything to do with anything that had to do with shame. And so whenever someone was like, oh my gosh, you eat bacon? I'm like, yes. And this is what I used to look like just 8 weeks ago. And they'd be like, oh my gosh. And that feeling was so empowering to me that like, I'm doing something that people think is bad, but it is working out so good for me. And it was just like, I walked around with a smirk on my face. Like, hey, yeah, I'm doing this and I'm not sad about it. Like if I felt sad, I'm making a pack of bacon and I'm about to go in. Like, that's not very sad at all. You know, good luck with your garden salad tonight on a Friday night. Like nobody should be eating a garden salad on a Friday night. It's just, that's like Tuesday night food. You don't eat a garden salad on Friday night. So, you know, I'm like, what do I want to eat on a Friday night? And I'm just like, all right, this is how we're going to cook. This is how we're going to make food. And that's how I just encourage people. Like, this is not your mom's diet. Like, this is like for people. And I say this with no disrespect, because I always look at myself as that girl who I used to be, that 260 pounds, size 20. Like, this is fat people food. This is the food that we love, that we sit and eat and watch TV. This is the food that we love. So don't sit here and think, oh, I'm not going to get to eat this or eat that. Like, I say, this is what you get to eat. And we even have that same mantra, like with our kids. We don't say like, oh, we can't eat this or we can't do that. We say we don't. Like, I don't eat bread. I can eat bread if I want to. I'm just going to feel like crap for 2 days after. So I don't. But I get to eat these foods and I get to feel this way, and I'm taking care of my body. So I think doing all the research that I did made me feel extremely confident in being able to say, I know that I'm making a good choice. At that point, I felt like it was kind of like bulletproof, because I knew people were going to have a hard time with it the same way that I did. So I felt like I needed to know, and I didn't learn to teach. I learned so that I knew it. Like, I needed to feel confident in what I was doing, because I knew there were so many naysayers that when they started saying, oh, this is bad, your heart's going to explode, you're going to die young, and all of this, that I would be confident in what I was doing and know that I was making the right choice. So I went super crazy and like learning all the science that I could behind it, why it works, how it works, who it works for, who it doesn't work for, who thinks it doesn't work for them, and why it actually works and why it's better for us. And then once I learned it for myself, it's like, how can I know this and continue to feed my kids the stuff that I'm feeding them? I just couldn't do it in good conscience as a mother. I was almost like, dang, Abby, you shouldn't have done all that research, because now you have to make your kids actual dinner. Like, Chef Boyardee doesn't count as dinner for your kids tonight, because you know that is not what's best for their body. So if it's not good for your body, why is it good for their body that's still growing and developing? So it was like, okay. And that was another moment where it was like, we were struggling with my son. He was basically nonverbal, 2.5, almost 3 years old. And he had a referral for autism. And I felt like, oh man, like I felt like it was my fault, honestly, because of my postpartum depression. I didn't really connect with him. Like, it would just be me and him home all day while my husband was working. I barely interacted with him. I just fed him all day long. That's it. I barely spoke. I could go days without speaking a single word. And I was like, this is my fault. And so I felt the weight of that. And I was just like, man, I can't deal with this. Like, what if my son never speaks because of what I was dealing with myself? And I know people are like, they don't want to talk, don't force them. But I think every mother can honestly say, you want to hear your son or your daughter say at least some point, mom or dad, or I love you or something. And so I just started thinking like, I don't want to be the cause of any barrier that he has to not be able to live his life to the fullest. If he chooses not to speak, that's on him. That can be his choice. But I want to make sure that I remove every barrier. And so I just started praying about it. And I really felt like God said, hey, the same way that you've been stewarding your body, I've given you these children and I want you to steward them properly. Don't worry what anybody else is doing. Don't worry about what everyone else says, but this is what I'm telling you to do for your children. And so I was like, okay, I guess this is what we're doing. And we stopped buying all the sugary foods that we had in the house. I didn't make an announcement like, hey guys, everyone's going keto. But just like, I'm not buying it anymore. I can't keep buying you Goldfish when I know how bad they are for you. I can't do it. Like, I might as well just buy them, you know, some alcohol. Like, what's the difference? This is poison. This is poison. Why is one okay and one is not until they turn this age? Like, if they turn 18 and they decide they want to go ham and, you know, open up a donut shop, go for it. But as long as you're living in my house, I'm going to steward your body the way that God has instructed me to do so. And so we just stopped buying everything with sugar in it. And I was like, all right, I'm not buying it anymore. And then we moved maybe about 2 months after that. And we moved into our new house. We've been here for about 3 years now. We didn't bring anything with us that did not fit this lifestyle. And that's honestly where House of Keto came from. I wanted to create an environment for my kids where there was no food that was off limits. Because I remember growing up, it was like, oh, can we have the special snacks? No, not yet. Or it was used as a, if you're good, you'll get sugar. Yeah, if you're bad, you don't. And so I didn't like that. I didn't like food being used like that. Like, I need food to survive. Like, that's it. And so I wanted to create an environment where no foods were off limits for them. So everything that we have here in our house is along the lifestyle that we live. It's keto friendly. We might have some stuff that might be seen as like lower carb, but we have a special area in the house for that. And my son hardly touches any of that stuff. He mostly eats meat and eggs and almond flour crackers. But it was like, I don't want them to say, I don't want to say no, not right now, because at that age, they don't understand well, why is this cookie good and this cookie is not? Well, this is a keto cookie and this one's not. No, like these are the only cookies that we have in our house. And so we just created this environment where everything that is here is in line with that lifestyle. We don't have anything in our house that is not good for anyone in this house to eat. And so obviously, you know, we do have some things that would be seen as keto treats. And so our little saying is meat before treats. If you're hungry, if you've had meat, you can have as much, you can have as much as you want of anything else. But I know when they eat meat, they're going to be more full. So they're not going to feel hungry. And honestly, we spend money on food, a lot of money on food and stuff now, because obviously I'm a recipe creator and all of our content and stuff, but on the actual stuff that my family eats, like our food bill has gone way down. Like we are on, I think our seventh freezer now, because I cook so much, I have to make so much food for like content and stuff. Even when I make a small recipe, like just enough for four people, my family, they can't eat it. They're not hungry for it. So we have to have freezers so we can save this food. I'm like, if I ever go missing, you guys will be fed for at least 2 years with everything, everything that we have in our freezer. I don't have to worry. After that, you guys will probably go back to your old way of eating or whatever. But yeah, we wanted to create an environment that was easy for them to just feel safe in. And we weren't using food as like a tool or a treat or a reward. Like they're not animals. You know, I'm not going to make my kid, you know, clean their room for some gummies. Like, no, we don't do that in adulthood. So why would I do it with my kids in childhood? You know? Mm. So we just kind of just changed the environment for them, and just made it, hey, this is what we do. So, you know, as we were changing my son's diet, he was hardly eating anything. Like he would eat Goldfish syrup, whipped cream, Tootsie Rolls, Dr. Pepper. He hadn't had a piece of protein for like almost a year and a half. And so I'm like, anything you want in this house, you could have. And you know, he's little. So he would go in the pantry, he'd grab out, he'd see a fish on a can and it was a can of salmon. He'd say he wanted it. I'd open it up, I'd prepare it. He'd turn it down. Like I would cook sometimes 15, 20 times a day, just making everything that he asked for. I gave it to him because we were just trying to show him like, hey, anything that's here, you can eat, you can try it. One day he wanted to eat sour cream out of a bucket. I put it in a bowl for him. And for a week, he liked it. Sour cream was part of his diet. I'm like, hey, if it's in this house, you can eat it. And he's adapted obviously over the last 2.5 years to find foods that actually are, you know, stuff that he likes, but he lives for ribeye, salmon. Like even if we go out and it's, we're having a celebration and they're eating food that's not keto, like he's like, where's the ribeye? Where's the salmon? That's what he wants to eat. If he gets a burger and we're out, he will take it off of the bun and he sits the bread to the side. He says, this is my dessert that I'll eat later. And he still he'll eat the burger patty. And then you know, he might take 2 bites of the bread. But it's just, it's not something that's part of our everyday regular life. And people are like, oh, well, you're taking away their memories and all of this stuff. I'm like, I don't want my kids having memories around Fruit Loops and ice cream. Like, let's create real memories, not, you know, centered around food. Like, yes, food could be a part of it, but he's not missing out on life because he doesn't have Fruity Pebbles. Like, that's a sad life. If all of your memories only have to do with food, like that's sad. You know, that's what my childhood was like because I didn't have anything else. And so it's like, no, we're creating memories. We're traveling. We're doing things together as a family. We're playing games or creating true memories that stand the test of time and are not just isolated to food. And might there be food there? Yeah. But the memory is not centered around food because again, that goes back to, okay, well, what made me feel good when I was a kid? Well, it was ice cream or it was this. No, it was spending time with my family. Like we enjoy those foods together as a family or as a community. And that's one of the things we teach people in our groups and our clients is, hey, if there's a time and place for this, but let's do it in community. We're not going to eat alone. We're not getting 6 donuts and sitting in our car and crying about Barb at work and pissed you off. Like you're doing it in community. And if you don't feel comfortable sharing the way you eat in front of other people, then you shouldn't be eating that way. I wouldn't dream of eating an entire pizza at a party. Mm. Like you get 2 slices and you go sit down so everyone doesn't think you're greedy. Like I wouldn't eat the entire pizza. So we teach people how to not do this in isolation and use these foods, these sugary foods or these treats or these celebration foods, whatever you want to call them. We teach people how to use them at the proper time. Like do it in community, do it together as a group and not just by yourself where you're using it to comfort you or to solve some, you know, life's problems.
Wow. I think that's so smart. That is so well said. It's so cool about your family. Make sure you give Huxley a big old high five from me for basically eating the same exact diet that I eat, just ribeyes and eggs. And this is so great. And I don't think a lot of people realize that kids will choose the right foods if you give them the choice. Most of the time they don't have the choice, but it doesn't, it doesn't seem, I don't have kids, but it doesn't seem like it would be like horribly challenging to do what you guys have done. Just provide options, some good options in the house. Don't have the other crap in the house and just see what happens.
Exactly. And I say to people all the time, I'm like, look, Huxley's five. He doesn't have a job. So he doesn't get to pick the foods that are here. You know, like he doesn't have a choice on whether or not he's going to brush his teeth. He doesn't get to tell me, no, mom, you know, I'm staying up till midnight. No, you brush your teeth. You're going to take a shower, clean underwear, and you can pick from the foods that we have here. Like I'm not putting on pants to go up to the grocery store to buy you goldfish. And I think, you know, if you're in a situation, what if you couldn't afford that? You know, what if they want McDonald's? What if a mother couldn't afford McDonald's and she has rice and beans at her house? Is she abusing her children for not giving them McDonald's? Like everybody doesn't have access to the foods that some of us do. So if I have, you know, I have steak, I'm, you know, I have pictures of when we first started, he's got steak, he's got tomatoes, he's got cheese, he's got salmon, he's got all of these great quality foods. And you want to say something about the way we're taking care of our kids because you don't see a dino nugget or mac and cheese. Like that stuff is delicious, but this is, there's nothing wrong with me doing this. But he can choose whatever he wants to eat. We never, ever, 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 ever force food. And I always say that to parents, never force food. We never force our children to clean their plates. We never force them to eat. We ask them if they want to eat. If they say no, they don't have to. If they say that they're full, then they stop eating. I'm not going to force you to finish your plate just because someone in some other country doesn't have any food.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense. You know, I can't ship them the plate. They're not getting it because you ate it. You know, you're going to deal with the health problems and issues that are caused by you being forced to eat all your food. Like, so we don't do that. So we never force food down his throat. We never say, oh, you're not getting up till you eat this. We did, we basically used time. And so based on the meal that it was, that was the amount of time that we would spend at the table. And so when we first started with Huxley, his behavior was off the charts, like screaming, tantrums, throwing stuff. So it was, you know, for breakfast, I think for breakfast, it was like 2 minutes. Lunch was like 3 minutes and dinner might've been 5 minutes that we would focus on. Hey, you're going to sit here at the table with your plate of food. Whether you decide to eat it or not is up to you, but we can't throw it. We can't fling it off the table. We're not flipping cups. We're not doing any of that. And that's how we started because his behavior was off the charts. And so it was just, it was hard. And I tell you, I wore plates so many nights. Wow. He would flip the plates over and start grabbing other people's plates and stuff. And it was just, we didn't give up. We had to stick to it. And there were so many nights I cried myself to sleep. And I'm like, God, if at any point you want to change your mind about what you told me to do, that would be great because this is hard and I don't think that it's working. And so just the patience that we had to have, the patience to just love him through that transition and know that this behavior wasn't something that he could control, but could honestly be a result of the foods that I was giving him. Like he couldn't help the fact that he was addicted to sugar. I gave him those foods. So I just see that essentially I was causing him more harm by continuing to feed him that way instead of removing this barrier for him to possibly open up his brain to be able to develop the way that it wanted to. And so that's just what I had to remember in the back of my mind. Like I'm doing this to help him. And so he could literally, there was a time we had bone broth. Sometimes they come in those little bottles that look like a juice box. And I think that's what he thought it was. He brought it to me. He said he wanted to have it. I opened it up, put a straw in it, and he took a big gulp. I guess he thought it was like orange juice or something. We have a video of it. He spit it out and it was just so funny, but it's like, well, whatever is here, nothing here is off limits to you. You can have it. And that's how he found the different foods that he liked. And he would get fixated on certain foods for a certain period of time. And we would go slow with him. We wouldn't push him like you have to be eating ribeye today, but remember there was a time where all he ate was like melted cheese and sauce. And that was a very hard period because any restaurant we went to, if they didn't have melted cheese and sauce, we would have to go like order a large pizza from somewhere and scrape it all off. We'd like walk into the restaurant with the pizza and I'm like, hey, this isn't sustainable. So we're going to move off of the sauce and cheese for a while. And now we're going to go to, you know, we'd just gradually move him up until he literally worked his way all the way up to ribeye and salmon. Like that is literally the staple of his diet. He doesn't even eat cheese anymore. Like he doesn't like it. He just stays away from it, which is crazy to us because it's really what he lived off of for probably like a good 6-7 weeks. But just if you're the parent, you get to decide what your children have access to. And just knowing what we know and like, we started talking, you know, before this conversation, we don't tell parents like, hey, you're wrong if you don't do this for your children. You don't necessarily know what I know about what these foods do to your body. And once I know, I can't, why would I I don't put it in my body, but I put it in my little 5-year-old's body. That just doesn't make sense. Either I know this and I believe it to be true, or I don't. And so that's just one of those things where, like, hey, if I believe this to be true, I'm walking it out, and everyone that knows me is going to be impacted by this. And it's like, if you had a cure for, you know, a deadly disease, why would you just keep it to yourself? Like, you would want to tell everybody, you would help everybody, you would help your loved ones. And so that's what I've done. So I'm like, God, this whole thing was not just for me, but if I had to go through everything that I went through to help my son, I mean, the kid never stops talking. He could give a presidential speech right now if I gave him the opportunity. And it's like, to see that, to see him, his behavior change, to go from this kid who, like, literally he'd be the kid in the restaurant that would be turning over the flower pots. Like, we could not all sit at a table together. One person had to be up with him as he destroyed everything while someone else was sitting at the table with our daughter. And now he's like the most loving kid. He just, like, is so well-behaved, good-mannered, has a great personality. And it's like, man, if I went through everything that I went through to be able to help him, to be able to be in the place that he's in now, like, it was all worth it. And as a mom, there's no greater reward than seeing my son on a daily basis and knowing what we dealt with and what we struggled with, and seeing him now and just say, you know what? It was worth it for me to be depressed and anxious and to go through what I went through for him to be living the life that he's living now. It was all worth it.
Wow. That is absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for talking about that experience. It's so cool. I'm so happy for him and happy for you. And I'm glad he made it onto the website as one of the people on the team, which is so fitting. What a cute kid. That's so great. You have improved my life significantly by introducing me to this gift of the gods, Twisted Bacon. Oh my goodness, I've never had a more delicious treat, like crispy on the outside, kind of lippity on the inside. Like, how did you come up with that idea? It is amazing.
It's wild. So I was actually just starting to, one of the gym that I was going to, they were having a party and they were laughing and joking, like, okay, Abby, well, what are you going to bring to the party? And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to bring bacon. I'll bring 20 pounds of bacon. And they were like, no way. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then I realized, oh crap, I've got to make 20 pounds of bacon. How am I going to make 20 pounds of bacon? So I just started putting a bunch of bacon on the pan. And there wasn't enough room to fit an entire pack on a cookie sheet. So I was like, all right, this is going to take me forever. I'm never going to finish this. So I started scooching them, like, closer and closer together. And then they started flipping and rolling. And then I was like, hey, I wonder if I twist it all the way up, if it will cook well enough that this will be like something that we could eat. And that's when it started, probably about four years ago. And it's just been the way that I've made bacon kind of ever since. I like crispy bacon. My daughter likes more chewy bacon. So I'm like, okay, well, if I make the bacon like this, twisted, it's kind of the best of both worlds. You can make it crispy, but it kind of stays a little bit chewy on the inside. It's like the perfect blend of both. And so we shared it quite a few times in, like, our private challenge groups and just on Facebook, but we had never shared it on TikTok before. So one day I was like, hey, let me show you guys my bacon hack. And I posted a video of me doing it. But I also, one of the things that I've learned is bacon is meat. It is not just an accessory. It's not just a little thing that we put on top of a burger. It is meat also. So I've learned, hey, like, I season my food. That's just the way I was raised. We season everything. So I was like, hey, let's season the bacon. So I started seasoning bacon probably like a year and a half ago. But when I made my twisted bacon, I told people, I'm like, hey, don't just twist it. You have to season it. We get like a lower sodium bacon, so it doesn't have as much salt. But the reason we do that is because that's usually only ones we can find that don't have sugar in it also, because we don't want the added sugar. So we always add our seasoning back in, not a lot of salt, but we still want it to have, you know, that normal bacon saltiness. Put the video on TikTok and the video went viral. People went crazy over it. And next thing we know, we're on people.com, Good Morning America, Today Show, Pioneer Woman, like all these places are talking about twisted bacon. I'm just like, wow, this is crazy. Like, probably one of the greatest honors of my life. I love bacon so much. To go viral for twisted bacon, I was like, I was crying. Like,
that's so
this is
cool.
Amazing. Like, Al Roker and his wife are making twisted bacon and, like, tagging me in it. Wow. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, this is crazy. Just absolutely, absolutely crazy. But it is one of my favorite ways to make bacon. It just makes it so fun. And there's so many fun things you can do with it. Like, we have bacon as our main protein many nights. And I don't think people think of it that way. They think of it as just something that they put on top of something. I'm like, no, this is meat. I can eat this, but I feel like I'm eating more. So it is my preferred protein, like, over chicken breast. I love steak, but I would still probably rather eat bacon.
Yes, I'm right there with you. Well, thank you so much for coming up with it and for sharing it with everybody. It really does taste different. One thing I get a lot is like, well, it's not that much different than regular bacon. And you're like, no, you have to try this. It's totally different. The texture is amazing. The flavor is amazing.
You gotta try it.
Gotta try it. That's amazing. Are you working on anything for the future? Anything that makes you excited?
So we are right now, we have our challenges that we currently do, like where we do like 21-day challenge where people come to basically teach them about keto. I share more of my story, kind of like I've shared with you, but kind of dig into other people's stories as well and just kind of give them a place to open up and share. So we do that on a monthly basis. That group usually has a couple hundred people in it. We've done larger ones before, but I like the more intimate. We're obviously working on a cookbook, which I'm super excited about.
Yes.
Just putting all of our recipes together and giving people a place to be able to find them. And then just working on some stuff to help people that really want to do this as a family, because I really think it's the best way to be successful. I always encourage people to educate themselves on the why behind this, because then it makes it so much easier to make this decision for your family instead of just mom's trying to lose 15 pounds. You know, she's not buying any more sodas. No, like let them understand. And so we included our kids in that. We included our daughter in that when we were learning and doing the research, and like she understands the why behind this. She could explain it to her group of friends on why she doesn't eat certain foods. And even when she does, like she's learned to self-regulate and just say, hey, like I don't feel really good. You know, I know there's a day left in vacation and I can have whatever I want, but I think I'm having eggs and bacon for breakfast this morning. And so being able to see that is just awesome. And so we're just really excited for the future. I'm back to, you know, doing this full time now. I didn't really consider being like a social media influencer or content creator as like a full-time thing. But you know, for the last, I guess, 2 months or so, I've been doing it full time and just putting all my energy in it. So I'm really excited for all the stuff that's coming and just all the people that we have the opportunity to bless, and not just with the ketogenic lifestyle, but just sharing our family story of hope, really, and just helping people find that. We're always encouraging people to get into therapy, always encouraging people to dig deeper and just see that, hey, this isn't about just eat less and move more. Like you've got to see what is going on there. And that's really what's going to make the difference. And to be able to do what I do every day, I'm going to just share that with people. I mean, I went live before this call, I was eating my lunch and it always ends up, it turns into tears in some way. You know, I'm just sharing my story of how God met me in that moment. And it's like every single day I get to wake up and do that and change lives with something that seems so insignificant or, you know, trivial. It's just the diet. And it's like, no, it was so much more than that. It is so much more than that for me and our family. So I love to do what we do and just share our crazy life with people. Just be real and authentic and show people like, hey, this can be fun. And this is something that you can do with your entire family.
I love that. That is so well said. And your intention is certainly coming to pass. I mean, you can pick up on how you guys approach things and how you make things really fun and positive. And I think it is just such a bright beacon of light for anybody who would like to try it and follow what you do. I think it's really amazing that you're sharing that message. This has been an awesome conversation. I am going to kind of change our last question just a little bit to say, what would you like to tell somebody who feels like they're hopeless, that they have tried everything, they've tried every diet, every supplement that you've tried, and they're where you were? What would you like to tell that person?
Oh gosh, same thing I say every day. There is hope. Like you matter. And it's not the diet. It's not a workout. It's not a meal plan. It's not even the right trainer or the right program that's going to make a difference. I think you have to see first that you are worth living a life that you love. And I think really digging deeper and getting to the bottom of what drives you to make the decisions that you make is going to make all the difference. It's going to show you to have more grace for yourself, and not to say that, well, this isn't your fault and you're not to blame, but there is a responsibility and weight that we carry around of feeling like a failure because that last diet didn't work or this program didn't work. And we've all wasted hundreds of dollars trying out different things. And you're probably going to continue to do that as long as you refuse to dig deeper. And so I tell people all the time, just dig deeper and figure out what's really there. We can't treat symptoms. We have to treat the cause. Mm-hmm. And when we start treating the cause, it's going to make all the difference. And I think it really allows you to just have a grace for yourself. Like I wake up every day loving myself, loving my life. I tell myself every single day, You're fearfully and wonderfully made. And I just speak that over my body. And I don't come from this place of defeat every morning or feeling like a failure. And I know what it feels like to wake up like that every single day. I know what it feels like to go to bed tired because of the weight of the depression and the anxiety. I know what that feels like, but you're not alone. There is hope. But you have to see and be willing to go deeper and figure out what that is. I can guarantee you whatever it is, probably wasn't your fault. You didn't do it. So you are not a failure. You are not worthless. You are worth more than you could ever imagine. And I want you to know that there is hope and that you can do this.
Wow. That is so beautiful. Wow. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your message of hope. I'm really grateful for everything that you've gone through. I know it's been a lot, but it's so positive and uplifting and empowering. And I'm so grateful for everything you share and for coming on our show today. Where should we send people so that they can connect with you and also, work with you and get a dose of that hope?
So you can find us on our website, www.thehouseofketo.com. You can also find us on Instagram, house.of.keto. We love connecting with our members, our clients, and just everybody in general. So definitely reach out to us. If you're having feelings, you have questions about our story at all, send us an email, send us a DM. We do respond. We do answer. It is us, not a big company powering us. It is me. And I love hearing you guys' stories and just answering your questions. So we'd love to connect with you.
Awesome. We will be sure to link to all of that in the show notes. Abigail De Luenga, thank you so very much for coming on our show and telling your story and sharing it around. We really appreciate you and your work and that you made time to come on and talk to us with us today. So thank you very, very much for all of that. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been an honor. And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio.